35 years ago, anti-apartheid activist advocate Anton Lubowski was assassinated outside his home in Windhoek. His killers have still not been brought to book, but his widow Gabrielle is still fighting for justice, and she is with us today. Welcome, Gabrielle.
Thank you, Chris, for having me on your show.
You're welcome. You've been haunted for decades by this, particularly by events in the days leading up to Anton's killing and to events on that day. Please take us through those events.
Yes, it's not so easy to know where to start. Yes, I think I must just give a little bit of an introduction. Why did we actually get involved in the liberation struggle? So when we returned from our studies to Namibia, Anton was doing his apprenticeship at a law firm, and he came across young black men who were in prison, not because they were criminals, but because they didn't have the correct papers. So they had studied overseas. They were doctors, lawyers, accountants, and they were sitting in prison. So he said to himself, something is off here. And he started investigating, and he stumbled upon many atrocities that were happening in the country, and that South Africa was actually illegal in Namibia, and a resolution had been passed that Namibia would be led to independence, Resolution 435. And as a lawyer, he took a decision that he was going to make a difference and contribute to Namibia's independence. He was given an opportunity to meet with the exiled SWAPO president on one of our December overseas holidays. And he absolutely fell in love with the man. He said he loved his vision for a new Namibia. And in 1984, he decided to join SWAPO publicly and said they are the only ones that can bring us the freedom. So that is our background. That's why Anton got. But we had no idea what it would unleash. And from 84 to 80, beginning of 89, we went through absolute hell. We were ostracized. We were cut off from the community. We lost our jobs. We didn't have enough income. We were abused, media attacks, constant police surveillance, Anton's detention. So it was terrible. Now, what Anton's role, the very important role that he played is, first of all, he was the link between the inside and the outside SWAPO, because he was traveling all the time to tell the international community about the atrocities that were committed against Namibian citizens. So that was his very important role. Then the atrocities that were committed up to that point, they were wrapped in secrecy. So he uncovered them and he spoke about them. It was the first time that these atrocities inside the countries were actually exposed. And then the third thing that he did is that he took upon himself the organization to have the exiled leaders and other members come back into the country by organizing the offices, the houses, the furnishing for the houses, so that these people wouldn't be stranded on the street. So he did those three very important things. Yet, after his murder, it was as if he never existed. There was just a silence around his death. He was not honored. We as a family were not supported. we were not taking into the fold of the SWAPO family. And again, we were isolated. We were cut off. So how do you continue with your life if before independence you were cut off and isolated, and after independence, the same? So I just did not know how to now continue with my life and the life of my children. And the project he was busy with at the time was he was looking at, it was called an organization, he was working together with a professor in Germany, was called NAMLAW. So they were looking at all the apartheid laws and to change them and transform them before independence so that those laws could not be used against other people. The second thing, sorry, I just made some notes. And so the second thing that he was busy with is he was working on an economic plan. Because Namibia is so rich in minerals, but local business people and entrepreneurs did not get opportunities to access that wealth. So he was working on an economic plan, and he was investigating the case of missing people. There were many Namibians that did not return from exile. Now, the fascinating thing is that in all of these three things, the president, the exiled president, and I don't know who of the other leadership were involved in all three. First of all, at that time, they were collaborating with the enemy. So there was not really an interest to, transform the apartheid laws. Secondly, the SWAPO exiled people brought all the, sorry to use that word, all these vultures into Namibia who were only there for their self-interest, like the Maurice Templesman, his CIA agent Bill Ullman, the French arms dealer, Guillaume, the mafia guy, Vito Palazzola. All these guys were brought in by the exiled SWAPO leaders. And Anton knew how to fight the South Africans. They were brutal, but they were straightforward. That is what they were doing. But this force was different. It was subtle. You know, you couldn't. And he did not know who these people were. SWAPO introduced them to him, and he thought it's okay to work with people. He didn't know they were arms dealers, that they were mining magnates, and you know what they're background was. And then he investigated, somebody gave him a list of missing people, and now we know what happened in the Lubango camps. That SWAPO, because the South Africans had beaten them in 1985, and they were busy with a witch hunt, killing their most valuable and important people. So that's what he was busy with. And like I said, the SWAPO leadership was involved in some or other way in all three of them. All this I uncovered in the 30 years, more than 30 years now, that I've been seeking for justice.
Okay, let's go to the day of his death, please, Gabrielle.
Yes, like I said, I, at the end of 1988, and I succumbed to a severe depression and decided that I was going to, I'd have to get out of the situation just for a while, just to reflect, just to gain, you know, who I am, also for the sake of our children. So the pieces that were put together was that Anton, so a friend told me a story, an old school friend of his, then a colleague of his, Hartmut Ruppel, that Anton had contacted them and said he urgently has to talk to them. But somehow it didn't work out. His school friend, they were at a braai, and the opportunity did not arise that they could check. But his friend told me, Anton, there was something that really worried him because he was not his usual optimistic self. And jokes that were made, which no matter how bad a situation was, he would always join in the jokes, but that evening not. Then he called his colleague Monday night, 12 o'clock. He said, "I urgently have to talk to you." And his colleague said to him, "I'm so sorry, I have to leave for the north tomorrow morning, 5 o'clock. Let's shift it to Wednesday. I'll be back in Windhoek." And then he had that walk with Hage Geingob on Tuesday morning. It seems he couldn't hold it any longer, whatever burdened him. And when Evelyn Groening interviewed me for her book, Incorruptible, the story of the murders of Chris Hani, Dulcie September, and Anton Lubowski, she said to me, if two people like that walk without bodyguards along Kaiser Street, which later became Independence Avenue, they are discussing something that they want to make sure 100% that no one hears them. And he must have told Hage Geingob what burdened him. And a couple of hours later, he was dead. What is significant to me is that whenever somebody asked Hage Geingob about that, he immediately threatened them with lawyers. Now, that is a very strange reaction. Because why would somebody not tell? That is what Anton was burdened, that what he told him. From that moment on, Hage Geingob has never granted me a meeting. So when he became prime minister and we were still in Windhoek, until 92, he never granted me a meeting. It doesn't matter how many times I asked him. And then finally someone said to me, "Why don't you write an open letter in the newspapers?" And all that happened is he threatened me with legal action. Now, I mean, there were many things I said once I realized what possibly could have going on. But what shocked me and hurt me the most, that he didn't even wanted to see my children. Now, when my children were small and they visited Anton in Windhoek, Anton always took them to the SWAPO offices. They were sitting on his lap. He was like an uncle to them. And now, when they wanted to see him about their own future, possibly making a difference in Namibia, and talking about their dad, he refused to see them. So that I will never grasp and never understand.
Have you tried to get answers from other people in SWAPO and the Namibian government?
Well, like I said, we then left Namibia in 92. It was actually friends of mine, friend of mine told me she had a dream, and my sister-in-law in Pretoria, she and her husband prayed about it, and they said, because I was determined to find out what had happened here, because my personality is like that. If you hide something, if I sense there's something that is off here, then, because I'm just wired to want the truth. Because I think the truth actually liberates. Yes, it is tough. There are consequences sometimes to truth, but it is the only way to go. If you want a healthy society, that's the only way to go. Why hide something? Because eventually it does come out. In whatever way. It's been proven again and again. So, I lost my thread a little bit here. What was the question again?
No, I just wondered whether anybody else
in SWAPO or in the
Namibian government has tried.
No. So, yeah, yes, we did. We did. I also, I always fell, to be quite honest with you, I did, whenever I went to Vinto, we left in 92, because I was just warned, leave your fingers from this case. It is dangerous for you and the children. So I decided then to listen. It was also that in 92, it was actually the first time I was totally in denial. I still expected Anton to one day walk in the door again. So it took me so long to actually realize he is actually gone. You know, he's never gonna come back. And with Samuel Yuma, every time I went to Windhoek, I contacted the office. I had lunch with him. I don't know how to describe it. I don't know exactly the words to use, but I could actually never have a proper conversation with him. It was a very strange, almost like a little boy. It was a strange way he would say things, and so I couldn't have a real conversation with him. And that's when Pohamba became president. I also tried to see him. He also did not respond to me. He did not want to see me. And then when I had finished my first book on Solid Ground, I can't actually remember how I got to the State House, which was this huge, I cannot explain to you how huge it was, a little bit outside Windhoek. I went there and I walked along passages and big halls and rooms, and there was nobody. It was just that silent. And I dropped off my book for Pohamba. But like I said, I never heard from them, or whatever attempts I made were basically ignored. And so in the end, all I did is when I went to Namibia, it was just to visit my mother, who was still in an old age home in Swakopmund.
Now, a high court inquest did find back then that Anton was killed by a hitman hired by the South African National Defence Forces Civil Cooperation Bureau. They denied that, but they did admit that they had Anton under surveillance. If they were not the ones who killed Anton, do you think they know who did?
To be quite honest with you, look, I visited Ferry Barnard in Pretoria. Mm-hmm. What is that place called where, you know, the real criminals that cannot...
Maximum security.
Yeah, that's right. I visited him there. And I don't believe there was any... He was already in prison. Everything that he did was exposed. There was no reason for him not to tell, but he actually didn't know. His only task was, he said, to observe Anton's house.
Mm.
And he had met Atchinson, who some other guys who at one point, there were two men, I can't remember their name, who contacted us. And they said that Donald Atchinson was just a patsy. He was he couldn't even hold an AK-47. You know, he was really a lost soul, which they just picked up. And Ferry Barnard said when he heard that Anton had been shot, he just got into his car and he drove, you know, down to South Africa. So they didn't know. So for me, I've always somehow known that they were only used as a decoy, because it was so easy just to say it was the South Africans, you know, it was the CCB. Of course, we are still leaving that door open, that we're saying it could have been some guy who just on his own took an initiative because, you know, they were filled with such hate against Anton. But I can't see why this person wouldn't have come forward, you know, by now. So, yes, let's say that possibility does exist, but the order definitely to kill Anton did not come from South Africa. That seems quite clear.
Did you find Barnard sympathetic in any way towards your quest for justice? Fadi Barnard?
Well, like I said, I was obviously a bit, you know, wary of him because I knew that people like that, can they actually tell the truth, you know? Because I also read the book that was written about him. And when you can see the trauma, you know, he had to endure as a child. And yeah, so when I went, I just hoped that he would be in a position to say, you know, to give me closure. But he wasn't. Yeah, he was not in a position because he actually really didn't know. I don't have a sense that he was, you know, that he was holding anything back.
So he fled Namibia because he thought he would be a suspect.
Yes, yeah.
Now, former Defense Minister Magnus Malan came out at the time, also obviously denying that the military had been involved, but then said they had no reason to kill Anton because he was a paid military intelligence agent. What did you make of that statement?
Yes, you see, when Magnus Malan, you know, made that statement, and that was another obstacle and hurdle we had to overcome in our life. Because for me, it was not only that he made that statement, but that Hage Geingob, in the media, he was interviewed and he said, it just proves that we have and had spies in SWAPO.
So they believed him?
Yes, they believed. So they sided with Magnus Malan. And that absolutely killed everything for me and my children. Because you know how most people would react? Where there is smoke, there is a fire. You see, and then they thought, oh, that's why the guy was so active in this whole thing, because he got paid for it, you understand? They couldn't fathom that here was a man that was actually just out of his heart because he couldn't see other people having to live under such injustice. And yeah, so that closed all doors for us. You know, why we should have given some appreciation and some acknowledgement, it was exactly the opposite. And so what we now know, they were definitely trying to get Anton out of the way. Because,
SWAPO.
Well, everybody, when you think about it. So it was SWAPO, it was the money power, it was the South Africans, because those three were under one blanket. They were negotiating with each other. Okay? So none of them could handle Anton. When they couldn't corrupt him, and they tried in various ways, the second they could do is to make as if he's a spy. So what happened when Anton was given took on the task for the exiled SWAPOs to come back, Alain Guillon approached him. Anton didn't know he was a French arms dealer. He was given the okay by SWAPO. So he approached Anton, he said, I've got a furniture factory in South Africa. If you buy from me, I give you a discount and a commission. And remember, Anton had no more work. He was now fully helping Swapo to return to Namibia, and they didn't pay him a cent. So he was happy because now he was earning. He had a family to look after, you know, in Cape Town. And so what they did is they bugged that furniture. So when that furniture was put, somebody must have said, and remember, Sam Nujoma was suffering from that paranoia, because that's a human thing. If you do something, he was collaborating with the enemy, and there's proof of that in the book Swapo Captives by Oliver Angula, the story of betrayal and torture, what happened to him in the Lubango camps, and the story of Andrea Shipanga, who challenged the president. Why were the Swapo soldiers fighting on the South African side? And he was imprisoned. It was only because he was married to this amazing woman, Esme Machikiza, and she kept the story alive because she had incredible contacts in the media in England. And so they couldn't touch Andrea Shipanga. Otherwise, he would have also been killed. So because Nujoma was collaborating with the enemy, he thought everybody, when something goes wrong, everybody else is collaborating with the enemy. So they must have said, like I said, nobody wanted to talk to me. I have to put the puzzle pieces together as I see them. And when they told Nujoma, do you actually know that this guy is possibly a spy? Because this is what happened with the furniture. I'm just assuming. I'm not saying it is like that, but Nujoma had many people killed. The strongest, the best in Swapo, he had killed. The book, Swapo Captives, gives record of that. Gabriel. So they were definitely trying to make Anton look like a South African spy, because that was the strategy. But they then decided. So I knew that it was a lie because I had lived with Anton. That's why I wrote that book on solid ground. I felt it was my duty. I wanted to tell the world, living side by side with Anton, that's what I experienced. Okay, so a guy like that cannot be a spy. And Anton was a person who would point out that what was wrong immediately when he walked into a room, when he walked, you know, he would be one of those people where everybody was hiding and whoosh, whoosh, and not, he would open it up. So his nature just wasn't the nature of a spy. So whatever information Anton had, that he shared with Hage Geingob on the Tuesday morning of his death, was stronger than, so they couldn't, because he was aware of that spy story and he took steps, because he wouldn't just succumb to that. That then the decision was taken, this guy needs to go.
Gabriel, what do you hope to achieve by speaking out now?
What I'm hoping to achieve is that to share with the people of South Africa and Namibia, we have to let go of racism. In Anton's case, it shows clearly, it is not the race that determines. It is the human being and his or her heart. So, whether you're white, whether you are black, whether you are pink, whether you are green, whatever color, the actions you are going to take are what your heart and your mind determines you to do. So that's what we have to look for. Now, the way I'm going to contribute, I discovered two things that I believe were shown to me. So The first one is our childhood years. Parents make the mistake to treat a child like a little adult. A child is not a little adult. It is a totally separate phase that leads into adulthood. So if a parent wounds the psyche, the soul of a child, which 80% of parents do, because statistics say only 20% are naturally talented to be parents. The rest has to learn it. And parents are not trained. Do you know that I've been, since 2002, in going to schools, and they absolutely resist this? Don't ask me why. So the most important thing is only when a parent has the power to shape the pathways in the brain. And it's only when those pathways are shaped through certain methods and techniques can we develop the higher capacities of compassion, of concern, of accepting difference. We cannot accept, we cannot get to these ways of being if we have been abused or treated incorrectly as children. So the first thing is, at every school, there must be a parent training department where parents are supported in how to raise a child, a healthy child. The second thing is that I was actually, it was a lady that came to our house that had a letter for Samuel Yoma, a message from God. So that God I'm talking about is Yahweh, the God that revealed himself to the Hebrews, the Israelites. And Yeshua the Christ, the anointed one, came to earth to show how to live a life of compassion, of fairness, of love, of mercy. And if we are willing to open ourselves and live, begin to live like that, which is a challenge, because it goes directly against human nature, then, because when you decide to follow Yahweh and Yeshua the Christ, you are shown who you are. So Yahweh or Yeshua is like a mirror to you, and you are shown who you are. The reason why I'm saying that, it happened to me and it was tough, because I saw things about myself that I didn't know. And that's when you then can become the person that makes life on this earth, live this life in peace and being just to each other and really learning to love one another. So that is the message I want to give. If as South Africans, those two things will happen, there is no reason why we cannot have that country that we all dream about and the vision we all hold in our hearts.
Thank you. That was Gabrielle Lebowski, the widow of a slain anti-apartheid activist, advocate Anton Lebowski, speaking to BizNews 35 years after his assassination in Windhoek. Thank you, Gabrielle, and I'm Christine.